Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have joining us on the show Dr. Jeffrey Simmons, fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, who recently retired after 45 years as a practicing physician. He has toured Israel and Spain as a lecturer on intelligent design, and is a radio personality, as well as the author of 9 books. These include What Darwin Didn't Know, which discusses intelligent design in the human body, and is now in its 10th printing, and Billions of Missing Links, which explores design in animals. Dr. Simmons, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You recently wrote an article for Evolution News entitled Porcupine Quills and Other Examples of Foresight. Could you tell us, what is foresight?
Yeah, this is an area that I think is critical to intelligent design, helping to define the word, and yet we talk about it, a lot of us talk about it, but I don't know if the label has been put on it or a definition, at least to my satisfaction, but it's pretty simple. Nature doesn't get to experiment if a trait is essential from the beginning. In other words, there's going to be something happening down the road with an animal species, and nature can't just guess at what that could be. It's got to have it locked in. One of the examples I give in the article is the porcupine, which has up to 30,000 spines that can be quite painful. Dogs get a snootful sometimes. And yet, when the animal is born, these spines are soft, and they harden up within hours once the animal's out. It makes sense. I mean, otherwise, there would be no porcupine. The mother would never be able to tolerate this. This has to be planned with foresight in mind. And I have a long list of examples I can go into, but this is a striking one.
So it sounds like foresight is a backup to prevent a problem or some sort of special accommodation for the future.
Absolutely. I sometimes call it what if and then what. In fact, in addition to the porcupine, one of the animals I use a lot in my talk are the giraffe. And the camel actually has a similar mechanism. But the giraffe has extremely sharp hooves, born with sharp hooves, and one can imagine that would be destructive to the mother. And yet these animals are born with a gelatinous covering, and it comes off in a couple of days, and there's no harm done. This has to be foresight, foreplanning. It couldn't have happened with two legs with coverings and two not, or animals with different hooves. This is planning. It happens with horses, too. The foals will have a gelatinous type of covering that also comes off. And again, these hooves would be very damaging. So those are in my article, but almost any animal you want to pick, you can find this. For instance, the pelican has a flap, two flaps, on its nostril openings. This animal would drown if those flaps weren't there.
Could you share maybe a little bit more about some of these animals you mentioned whose design shows foresight? I know you talked a little bit about a scaly anteater in your article.
Yes, I did. I've used this in my talks as well. The pangolin, which is an animal in Africa and Asia, which has extremely sharp, razor-sharp scales on its body, and it can roll up a little bit like an armadillo and protect itself, but there isn't any animal that's going to attack the outside upper part of it because of the danger. Well, this animal is also born with soft scales, just like a porcupine with soft quills, and they harden up within a day or two. Again, this takes foreplanning. I had mentioned childbirth, and that is pretty much where I start my talks when I give lectures. And I throw this out into the audience commonly, is that a baby, when it's born, there's so many issues that require foresight. But when a baby is born, if it takes a breath too soon, it suffocates. If it waits too long, it dies of hypoxia or certainly has brain damage. It has to take a breath within a certain window of time and all a certain moment in the childbirth timing. Otherwise, we won't have people. And so this had to be from the beginning planned that the baby would breathe. Also, interesting enough, there's an artery that's open when the baby's in the womb in the amniotic sac that carries the blood from the lungs where they normally would go past the lungs, and it goes back to the body, because there's no use for the lungs for oxygen being sunk basically in amniotic fluid. The moment the baby is born, that particular artery closes, and now the blood goes to the lungs to absorb oxygen and get rid of carbon dioxide. It's planned in advance. There is no purpose to it later in life. Granted, there are some examples of children who are born with congenital heart problems, and so this doesn't happen 100% of the time, but it happens 99% of the time. And why those few don't work is not known yet, but it may be totally unrelated to genetics. And so when the baby comes out, I could talk for hours about this, but what if the baby's infected? The body's prepared to respond, and it's not just a general term of infection, but also knows how to respond to a fungus infection, a bacterial infection, a viral infection. These are what-if situations. It's ready to roll. And some of the response is already from the mom who gives the baby some gamma globulin of her own. But as that wears off, the baby has to take over its own protection. Again, it's foreplanning, absolutely.
I like your example of the miracle of that first breath. You know, it's interesting. We talk a lot about mind, intelligent design, you know, mind shaping things and having primacy over matter. But here you kind of see a plethora of complex physical processes somehow developed by mind to safeguard a nascent human mind.
Absolutely. You know, going back a little bit to birth or pre-birth, I've often used this in my talks as well. There's a couple of books on it. One's called Sperm Wars. The sperm has foresight just worked into what happens with it, knowing where to go, how to go, and what to do when it gets to the egg. This has to be planned ahead. It has to be built in. And interesting enough, there are warrior types of sperm that will fight off other competitors. There's ones that can bulldoze ahead and other ones that can kind of dissolve the mucus on the way. They have a bunch of chores. They work together almost like I don't know what to use, an anthill. It's a funny connection, but it's teamwork. Only the best make it to the egg. Again, for planning.
You also mentioned reflexes in your article.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about this?
Absolutely. If you get something stuck in your nose, an irritant, you sneeze. If you get something stuck in your throat or your lungs, you cough. If you get something stuck in your esophagus, hiccups come. If you get an infection in your stomach, you get diarrhea to get rid of it. We have so many mechanisms to respond to problems. Again, this is foresight. What will happen if this happens, if that happens? Something has to be built in. Nature can't be experimenting with this, trying different things, when these traits are critical to the species. Like I mentioned earlier, the pelican would drown if it didn't have the flap on its nose. In regard to the human being, one could pick any system and talk about what I'm proposing, but just take the mouth and eating. Not only is the nose above the mouth, and you notice this in almost all animals, and that's a mechanism to check if the food is okay or not, among many functions. And it wouldn't be of any use if it was located anywhere else. The teeth in people have very sharp front teeth, incisors, and things that will bite off like an apple, or the molars in the back. There is no animals that have these reversed, as far as I know. So that's planned for what happens after you take a bite. But not only that, but the saliva in the mouth has enzymes which start breaking down the food, and a lot of fluids to help moisten food so it can be thrown back into the esophagus and go down to the stomach. Not only that, but also the teeth are designed to meet in the middle and do their work. It's interesting that the lower teeth will grow separately from the upper teeth, and somehow, with some exceptions, granted some people need braces and things of that sort, but in general, those teeth match up. And the same teeth that match up. Nature does this with legs and arms and eyes. Things match up, even though they have separate units causing them to grow and change. Again, we have so many things just in case. fever, for instance. Fever is a response to an infection. It is just like an antibody or gamma globulin. It also destroys invading organisms. Again, this is foresight. I can also talk about body forming new blood vessels and new nerves. We're learning this a lot nowadays with transplants, but we've known this for a while. If there's been damage to tissue, if there's a tissue growing, if there's an organ that's new, it's growing in a fetus, the blood vessels all know where to go. In fact, it's interesting with the brain. There's a period of time where 250,000 neurons are migrating to exactly the right place. Some of them climb other cells, some of them float, some of them crawl. They all know where to go, and they all know who or what to connect up with, and sometimes it's as many as 10,000 connections. Again, foresight, it doesn't happen by accident.
You know, this discussion reminds me of a craftsman who's looking beyond the initial functional design and providing for maintenance of his or her product.
Yeah. In fact, when you're making a car, if you were doing something along that line, or a boat or anything, you are planning all the things down the road that you're going to need to have and do, and some just in case, including getting your boat to float or your car just to drive. There has to be intelligent planning. Indeed, everywhere and everything we do has intelligent planning when it comes to animals and species and human beings. We often have intelligent design systems, and we talk about them in isolation. But you can't have a car without a steering wheel, but four wheels. You have to have the steering wheel designed, and you have to have those tires designed. You have to have the front and the back and the headlights. Well, the same thing with a human being. Intelligent design is going into the eye, but when we talk about that kind of in isolation, but it has to be there along with the nose and the mouth and all their functions, the feeling of touch, but not only the eyes, but eyes have to have foreplanning in the fact that they have to be able to see at least 180 degrees or more. And as predators, we seem to have our eyes up front, whereas prey often have them on the side if you look at mammals and cows compared to people. But the eyes have to be able to work together. So you have two eyes that are developing separately, and yet they know how to work together, toss a ball to a one-eyed dog, and they won't be able to catch it. Indeed, a one-eyed person would have a similar problem. But a two-eyed individual would be able to. And so they know how to work together. They move together with some exceptions. And it's the same thing with the hands and the feet. We balance ourselves with our feet and our big toes in particular.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing more about nature's foresight.
My pleasure.
For listeners who are interested in more about intelligent design in animals and the human body, we'd encourage you to take a look at Dr. Simmons' books, Billions of Missing Links and What Darwin Didn't Know. This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.